Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
So if you live in New York City and you've seen New York Magazine this week, you are probably boasting or complaining about your neighborhood's ranking in Nate Silver's Most Livable Neighborhoods article. Many of you know that Nate Silver is an obsessive numbers cruncher who founded Baseball Prospectus and then the political projection site 538, which is a reference to the number of electoral votes in a presidential election. He correctly predicted, was it 49 states, Nate? 49.
Indiana always gets the
You got Indiana wrong, which went for Obama.
Yeah.
Wouldn't go for Obama today.
It probably wouldn't.
In the 2008 presidential election, of course, that was. And now he has applied a host of measurables to quality of life in New York City to produce his article subtitled A Quantitative Index of the 50 Most Satisfying Places to Live. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian.
And in a minute, we'll dive in on some of your more controversial rankings, like the Upper East Side and Upper West Side coming in 35th and 36th, right below Red Hook, Corona, and Midtown West. But let's talk about your metrics first. The cost of housing was really your elephant in the room, accounting for 25% of your ranking. Transit convenience was next, worth 13%. Everything else was in single digits. Schools, safety, parks, each worth less than 10%. How did you come up with these values?
Well, I mean, it's kind of a two-part question. With the cost factor, it's so hard to do something which is general when everyone has their own budget, their own their own needs. So we kind of thought, well, one extreme is if you just say cost is no object at all, it's just purely the best neighborhood if money can afford it. So that'd be 0%. And then the other extreme is, well, pure best bang for the buck. Let's try and arbitrage a little deal here or there. We kind of end up where we end up, and that'd be 50%. So we took 25% just being the midpoint of those two. But it's hard to say. You know, we wound up with a really, I think, well-balanced list where you have fairly expensive neighborhoods and fairly cheap neighborhoods relative to New York. You always need that caveat at the top of the list.
And I should say that you have a great feature on the New York Magazine website, which may be better than the article itself, where users can individualize their criteria. So listeners, if you're figuring out where to live just within the five boroughs, this doesn't go to the rest of the region, but you can shrink housing costs to 2% of your equation and expand parks or schools to 90% or whatever to make what they call a personal livability calculator. Nice tool. So listeners, let's do some of that on the air. I mean, you can crow or quibble about your neighborhood's rankings as we go down the list, and you will, and that'll be fun and interesting, but maybe even more interesting, call in and say, what makes a New York area neighborhood very livable in your opinion? Are housing costs and transit convenience at the top of your list? How important is green space or nightlife or whatever? 212-433-WNYC. What makes a New York area neighborhood livable in your opinion? 212-433-WNYC or great, not just livable. 212-433-9692 or post it to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And okay, Nate, your number one livable neighborhood is Park Slope. Number two is the Lower East Side.
Sure.
Number three is a dark horse, Sunnyside, Queens. Want to talk about Sunnyside first, a hidden gem if ever there is one, you write.
Well, I mean, if you look at Sunnyside, it's only about, you know, 15 or 18 minutes outside of Midtown on the train.
On
the 7. It's a nice family neighborhood. It's very diverse, and we account for diversity both directly and indirectly because it usually means you have pretty good food as well. It's safe. I mean, you know, it's a place that also you can get an apartment, a 800-square-foot apartment for about, you know, sometimes $1,200, which is affordable not just by New York standards, but, you know, for kind of normal people as well, I think. And so it just, it's a very good value that's close to the city. If you want something more exciting, you can take a cab or a livery service, I guess, to Astoria or Greenpoint, which kind of run up against it. You know, I don't know. I would think eventually, maybe in 5 or 10 years, it'll kind of become the new Greenpoint. But I'm sure, actually, you know, from reading comments on New York Magazine's website, there seem to be as many people in Sunnyside who are proud of it as who are worried that, hey, you know, now it's going to become discovered. Because it is a very rich, middle-class community, diverse community as it is right now, and it deserves to be, you know, get more attention, I think.
I know Sunnyside a bit. I have some family there. It's very income diverse, and it's very ethnically diverse, but parts of it are really gentrifying.
Yeah, and we look not just at not just race along, you know, kind of white, black, Hispanic lines, but also at the number of distinct ethnic groups, which you can also get from Census Bureau data. So you have, you know, Ecuadorians and Colombians and Albanians, and you have, you know, a little
bit
of everything there.
There's a Bangladeshi community there.
Yeah, yeah.
So many folks. So that ranked very high on your diversity measure, obviously. Now, we don't have a Sunnysider yet calling to crow, but I think Maria in Manhattan covered Sunnyside as a journalist. Maria, is that right?
Hi, that's right. When I was in journalism school a couple of years ago, our first semester, we had to pick a neighborhood that we wanted to focus on. And it was, for me, it was between that or East Harlem. And part of the reason I chose Sunnyside was I knew it because my mom is Irish, and I used to go to the Irish shops there to get newspapers and stuff from Ireland and groceries and whatnot for her. And it was convenient to Manhattan where I worked. And I mean, I thought it was a terrific neighborhood. It really is so diverse. I mean, I interviewed, you know, street musicians from South America, another guy from Colombia who taught like accordion to kids. I went on a ride along with the local cops there, which a lot of my classmates who were covering different neighborhoods in the city could not get any headway at all. And the local precinct volunteered and said, you know, sure, you can come along. And it was interesting. I mean, the biggest thing we dealt with that day was, you know, somebody's car lights being stolen or broken or whatever. And I think it really is a great gem. And the nice thing is, I think the article points out, you know, maybe there's not a lot in the way of nightlife and so forth, but it's true, you're just, you know, such a short ride away from Manhattan and from Jackson Heights if you really want to try out a lot of Indian food. But I've even noticed in the last few years that the restaurants have started to change and become more diverse than mm-hmm. just, you know, pubs. And I think there's, you know, like Bulgarian or Romanian restaurants and things like that. So I think it's terrific. And when it came time to buy my first place about a year ago, I would have loved to have bought there, but I really was looking for some place that had easy parking as well as an easy commute, which is really important to me.
Right.
And I ended up in another, what I think is a great gem, which is West New York. And I take the ferry to work every day now, and it's the most fantastic experience.
Maria, I'm going to leave it there, but that's great testimonial to Sunnyside with a lot of specifics. And thank you so much. And to West New York. Now, let's see. I don't remember West New York being on the list at all, was it?
No, we didn't. Well, here's one thing that people, I guess, have a right to be upset about. But we limited the list to 60 neighborhoods, in part because it just it takes a long time. Like, literally, we had someone kind of counting every laundromat in New York and assigning it to a neighborhood, or every murder kind of less cheerily, I suppose. You know, I think having seen the feedback the project's gotten, if we do it again in future years, you know, we might go for 80 neighborhoods or take some of the large neighborhoods like Upper East Side or like Astoria and split them up into smaller parts. But there are some things that it's not necessarily the 60 best neighborhoods, just the 60 that we thought was, you know, almost everything in Manhattan, most of Brooklyn, and then what we hoped was representative coverage of you know, Staten Island and the Bronx.
Nate Silver, who wrote the 50, I guess it's in the magazine it's the 50 and online it's the 60 best neighborhoods?
It's the top 50 of the 60 we looked at. Yeah, it says the 50 best in the city. You know, I'm sure if we looked at maybe Forest Hills, just one I've heard a couple of complaints about, it seems like you have about, frankly, 40 neighborhoods that kind of get on a list on their own merits, and the last 10 it kind of tails off a bit. So I think there are some slots open if we kind of expanded the criteria in future years.
The article in New York Magazine this week. The other one that I was going to mention that's not included, unless I missed it, was the whole stretch of Eastern Queens neighborhoods, Whitestone, Bayside, Little Neck, Douglaston, which has by many measures very high quality of life. It's almost suburban with lots of single-family homes and parks and great schools. I grew up there, but also relatively close to Manhattan, if that's important. What happened to Eastern Queens?
Well, you know, we like I said, we didn't include everything that we might have, but you know, this is a list designed to reward neighborhoods that are close to Manhattan. I mean, mm-hmm. literally, you know, not just in terms of, hey, Manhattan's, you know, we think Manhattan's cool, but we look at commute times for someone who we hypothesize is a worker somewhere in Midtown or, you know, in lower Manhattan. So it's hard for neighborhoods that are more suburban and character to maybe do all that well? I mean, hey, we're looking at, you know, diversity and creative capital, so-called, and, you know, nightlife. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it is a very urban ranking, and it's different than, you know, best places to live like you might see in Fortune magazine or something where it's much more suburban criteria.
Sam in the West Village has some criteria for ranking livable places in New York City. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Okay.
I think that the most important criteria should be the number of Native New Yorkers that live in the neighborhood, or people who are at least, you know, committed to spending a long time in that neighborhood. For me, that
right, a dagger right to Nate Silver's heart, who just recently moved here from Chicago.
Well, I would say the West Village, if we didn't factor in cost, would have actually been first, which is just how dramatic a difference it can make, where with cost included at only 25%, it drops to, I think, 23rd or 24th or thereabouts. But, you know, I love that neighborhood personally. You know, look, I think it was brave of me and of New York Magazine to take someone who moved here only a little bit more than a year ago. I've been a pretty frequent visitor for a long time. My sister lived here, you know, for 5 or 6 years before that. You know, at the same time, I think, you know, maybe you avoid having too many prejudices, I suppose. I mean, I think if I had...
Do you think you brought a certain kind of fresh eye? Anything that you could put into words?
I think it was a good mix. I mean, if I hadn't been here at all, I mean, you have to place some of this stuff in context. You're dealing with data that's sometimes very good and straightforward, like crime rates. It sometimes is a little bit more mixed quality, you know. And, you know, although I had help from people at New York Magazine to not have your own common sense for, hey, this, you know, this doesn't make sense. An apartment can't be that expensive there. You know, there are better restaurants there. I know because I go there once a month. If I hadn't lived here at all, it would be very difficult. At the same time, if I'd lived here for 10 or 15 years, then maybe some of the neighborhoods that are changing a lot, like a Lower East Side, for example, which we ranked highly, you know, I might have had a bias against, be like, oh, this is wrong. You know, whereas for me, being pretty new here, you know, it doesn't have some reputation it might have. And I'm like, yeah, I can see why that makes sense. You know, it's near everything. It's very vital. You know, it's a lot cheaper than almost anything else in Lower Manhattan. I can see why that would rank as a good deal. But if you're hung up on it, then maybe not. So,
And Sam's point is actually very provocative, I think, wanting to live in a place with a lot of Native New Yorkers or people who've been here a long, 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 long time, because it kind of runs against the diversity scale. And I was thinking about when you listed diversity as one of the criteria for high quality of life. I mean, for me, it definitely is. And I've chosen diverse neighborhoods as an adult. But there's a whole other large group of people who say, I want to live with people like me.
Yeah. I think maybe the best neighborhoods strike the right balance where, like a Sunnyside, you have kind of micro communities within, but it's all kind of integrated. But it's tough. People say when we took the survey that they want diversity. If you look at how it relates to housing prices, it's actually somewhat inversely correlated. So maybe people are being kind of aspirational, I suppose. I mean, one thing I do wish we looked at that I didn't do is look at diversity of the age groups within a particular neighborhood as well, where I think if you have a neighborhood that can have both, you know, both people in their 20s and young 30s and older people and families, it almost certainly speaks well to the livability of that neighborhood.
Nate Silver, who wrote The Most Livable Neighborhoods in New York in New York Magazine this week, a quantitative index of the 50 most satisfying places to live. And all right, we've got to do the Upper East Side, Upper West Side thing.
Sure.
Which came in 35th and 36th. That's going to pop some eyes.
Well, they're lovely neighborhoods. You know, I think for me, and I say this, you know, maybe as someone who lives in Brooklyn now, I think kind of the function that they kind of used to serve, to be a little bit greener, to have somewhat, you know, better schools, to have more park space, to be quieter, you know, maybe not the hustle and bustle, but great old housing, is starting to be served now by kind of the brownstone neighborhoods in Brooklyn, which aren't much farther away from, certainly from downtown, you know, a little bit further away from Midtown, obviously, and are often, you know, $1,000 a month cheaper, $1,500 a month cheaper than Upper East Side, Upper West Side. So I just think maybe the values there are a tiny bit inflated. With that said, a couple of caveats. Number one, those are very large neighborhoods. They have about 220,000 people apiece, actually. You know, most of our neighborhoods are a lot smaller, so if you broke it down into Yorkville or Carnegie Hall, which we probably would do if we did this again, you might see some parts of the neighborhood rank higher. For number two, we don't account for private schools, only for public schools, and, you know, especially in the Upper East, if you have a kid who's going to Dalton or something, that's a huge asset you can't quite get elsewhere in the city. If we accounted for that factor, it would probably move up the list a little bit as well.
Dina in Prospect Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi, Dina.
Hello, good morning.
What do you think?
So I think what makes it livable is you feel when you walk out your door that you're participating in life and that you don't have to either drive there or get on a train to go where you want to go. It's nice to be where, you know, a few steps from the park, from museums, libraries, playgrounds if you have kids. And, you know, it's exciting. You walk out and, you know, you're not traveling in your free time. And then at the same time, when you have to go to work, it takes you, you know, 20 minutes to get there. I work in, like, the Flatiron District, and my husband's downtown. So, you know, it's easy. It's, you don't feel like you're always en route.
You want culture and street life and amenities right out your door.
Right. I mean, it goes back. I mean, I'm a planner by education. It goes back to Jane Jacobs. You know, you want that 24-hour street life. And, you know, where we are, we have, you know, all of the daytime life, that things that happen in Prospect Heights and Park Slope. But then at night, there's mm-hmm. also great restaurants as well and interesting cultural events that are, you know, we could go to BAM and so forth. And you can just walk there. You know, in the city, if you choose to live in the city, you usually don't want to be dependent on your car. You want to be able to walk or bike or, you know, get there quickly.
Dina, thank you very much. And I guess all of that is a very, very well-articulated way and concise way of saying why Park Slope came out number one on your list, right?
Yeah, and why, frankly, you know, Prospect Heights did well. A lot of these kind of Brooklyn brownstone neighborhoods did well.
Did I say Prospect Park? Park Slope.
Yeah, well, Park Slope was number one, but, you know, Prospect Heights was ninth. You know, Carroll Gardens was sixth. Brooklyn Heights was fifth. Cobble Hill was fourth, I think.
Greenpoint ranked very high, number five, right?
And Greenpoint's a Brooklyn neighborhood, but kind of on a different trajectory, I think.
New York Times was so surprised. It did a whole article
that
on
people
that.
People in Greenpoint were shocked, although then they, when they heard who was in front of them, they weren't so happy that they were number five.
Toxic oil spills and all.
You know, we did account for the health and environment category, but Greenpoint actually happens to have very good public schools. We looked at this very carefully, looking not just at raw test scores, but, you know, for example, we adjusted for the fact that some schools have more special education students. We adjusted for English as a second language, adjusted for demographics. If it's poor, you know, teachers have to work that much harder to get the same test score. We account for that. And it just did really well on the test scores, both raw and kind of our adjusted version, on parent satisfaction. So, you know, it's not cheap, but it's a little bit cheaper than Williamsburg. You have some of the same, you know, burgeoning kind of nightlife and restaurant scene. You do have a subway transfer, but it's not bad in the city. So it's, you know, somewhere which is maybe a little bit hipsterified as Williamsburg, and, you know, maybe a place to raise, I think, a young family, because the schools are very good. You know, you maybe can't send a kid to a public school everywhere in the city, but there you certainly can.
Now, I was waiting to see if Mauricio in Harlem or one of his neighbors might call up and lodge this complaint himself before I brought it up. Hi, Mauricio. You're on WNYC.
Hi there. Thank you so much for taking my call. Yeah, I bought in Harlem about 2 years ago. I'm in my early 30s. Me and my wife very much look forward to buying in an architecturally significant neighborhood, which West Harlem is, and to grow a family there. We just had a young kid. And the reason we picked that neighborhood is, you know, the closeness to two great parks, Central Park and Morningside Park, the African-American and Hispanic character, West Harlem being more African-American, but nonetheless, you still have the influence from East Harlem, and the transportation, amazing transportation, BNC line 1 and 3, all kinds of bus lines and so forth. So, you know, obviously the minuses are the restaurants are still not there, although they're coming fast, particularly in Frederick Douglass. We're having a very nice growth in restaurants there. And the schools, well, you know, they're not what I would like them to be. Right now you're seeing a huge growth in terms of the charter schools, Harlem Success Academy and so forth. So my question is, why did it rank number 50? That was a bit disappointing. And would it have to do also with the fact that you were looking at Harlem monolithically, meaning you didn't split, you know, West and East Harlem, particularly the 110th to the 125th area between Fifth Avenue and Morningside Park, where I think it's just a very special place.
Harlem, Nate, 50th out of 50 on your list.
Well, 50th out of the 60 that we looked at, and a couple of hundred neighborhoods in the city. So let's keep that in perspective as well. Yeah, I think Harlem's another neighborhood where it covers a lot of territory, and we might want to split it up. But, you know, I mean, that was a very good articulation the caller gave, frankly, of some of the strengths and weaknesses. It also lags a little bit behind parts of Harlem in terms of the crime rate. That can be so block to block. But look, it's very competitive in New York. There are a lot of good neighborhoods. So if you have, for example, a neighborhood that's a little bit behind in crime, neighborhoods don't turn around totally on a dime, or in public schools, you know, that can send something zooming way down the list. With Harlem, I think if you have bought a property as kind of an investment that, you know, you're looking for 5 or 10 years ahead, it should probably be totally fine. I think it will continue to improve. Certainly things like restaurants and bars will kind of follow where the demand does and where the people do. you know, so I think, you know, 5 years from now, it could be in the top 10 or top 15. Right now, with the crime rates being one of the more objective criteria and being not bad relative to where it was 10 years ago, not bad, frankly, relative to a lot of places in the country, but, you know, a bit high still relative to, you know, the rest of Manhattan and the rest of the city.
Mauricio, thank you for your call, and good luck with your baby. All right, back to the Upper West Side for just a second.
Okay.
You ranked it just below Midtown West. Now tell me really, would you rather live on West 34th Street or West 84th Street?
I would rather live in the upper, West 84th, I would think, you know. But, you know, parts of, you know, so-called Midtown, if we called it Hell's Kitchen or, you know, if we called it by a different name, it wouldn't seem quite so, I don't know. But it's also, you know, depending on exactly where you are, somewhat more expensive, you know. I don't know. You know, I think, you know, maybe also there's a factor towards Central Park in particular, where we looked at, hey, the amount of acreage in a park, and so Central Park gave lots and lots of credit to the Upper East, Upper West neighborhoods. Maybe it's so special it deserves a bonus multiplier or something. I don't know.
Are you going to go out and do some other areas? You going to have any interest in going out and ranking New Jersey or Long Island or Westchester? This is just for the five boroughs.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, a lot of our data sources come ultimately from the city, or from, you know, other people who are looking at the city, like New York University's Furman Center. And so if you started to look even at Hoboken or something, which, you know, for all intents and purposes is a New York City neighborhood, you just would be looking at different types of data, and that would just make the project a lot more work. So we're not being total snobs about, hey, just in the five boroughs, but practically speaking, it'd be hard.
And my last question before we take a break, and then I gather you're going to hang around and I don't know what, try to be annoying or something during our census quiz when we bring out our 10 questions.
I'm good at that, Brian.
Census quiz master. You are best known for doing projections based on statistics for baseball and for politics. Anything to project or predict about New York in the future based on these livability metrics that you've studied?
You know, I think you want to be 5 years ahead of the curve. Don't go to the neighborhood that's just getting all these cool bars and restaurants right now, because that's the last stage, right? You know, those things can pop up like fruit flies sometimes. You know, look for places that are cheap relative to having good transit infrastructure, to having nicer old housing stock, to having park space or blue space, because those things can't be changed overnight, you know. So something like, you know, Red Hook, for example, would be a counterexample. It's so far removed from the rest of the city where it's seen as being kind of very up and coming, but there's not a lot of places for housing to go. It's, you know, 35 minutes, 40 minutes into Midtown. You know, that would struggle versus something like a downtown Brooklyn, you know, which is near where I live, where, you know, hey, you know, you're near a lot of parks and all the other neighborhoods around it are quite wealthy. I mean, downtown Brooklyn's not cheap, by the way, anymore, but still you could see that becoming a real vibrant hub in 5 or 10 years because it is so proximate to everything else.
All right. So listeners, if you want to see more, Nate Silver's New York Magazine article this week, The Most Livable Neighborhoods in New York, and they do have that way to personalize it on their website, a personal livability calculator where you can kind of make the equation by dragging the buttons they have on the different criteria and ranking them for greater or lesser importance for you if you want to do that exercise. And Nate is going to stay with us as we bring in our 10 questions that count, Census Editor Valerie Lipinski. And listeners, call us up if you're game. Take the 10 questions that count census quiz, 212-433-WNYC. This is not actually about the census per se. This is about who we are. This is about the demographics of New York and America, 212-433-9692.